energy.
Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base, JonesWalker.com. And by Wyndham Garden Lafayette. And by Short & Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas.
From Social on Johnson Street in Lafayette, we're Out to Lunch with creative business consultant Aileen Bennett. It's business, Acadiana style.
Hi, I'm Aileen Bennett. Welcome to Out to Lunch. In Acadiana, we love music. Not only do we listen to it, but many of us play it. I don't have any statistics to back this up, but anecdotally, there are probably more musicians per capita here than anywhere in the country. Music, for many families, is a way of both celebrating and passing on the culture. It is, as the late Eddie Lejeune said, in the blood. Despite the fact that music is a central part of our lives, making a living from music is not easy around here. While we have lots of music, we don't have a lot of music business. We share that problem with the rest of the country. Since the advent of online music streaming services like Spotify, it's very difficult for musicians or record companies to make money from the sales of recorded music, which leaves music for film, commercials, and live performance as the principal sources of revenue for musicians today. With the focus on live music here in Acadiana, you'd think that would work out well for our local musicians. However, if you know any, you'll notice they're not living in gated mansions or driving fancy cars like their counterparts in Nashville or even Austin. So why not? Let's find out from two local musicians. Lane Mack was born and raised in Lafayette. He was a contestant on the TV show The Voice, and his record, Swampsadisiac, rose to number 2 spot on the iTunes Blues chart. Lane, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Hey, what's happening?
Sean Bruce was born and raised in Carancrow. Sean went to UL, where he graduated with a degree in business with a focus on music. He's the owner of Norwood Recording Company, his independent record label, which released his latest recording, Staring at Maps. Sean, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Let me start by asking both of you the same question. With the generations of focus on live music here in Acadiana and the withering away of the recorded music business across the country, you'd think that we'd be perfectly placed to be on the cutting edge of the music industry. But it doesn't seem to be that way. As I mentioned, we don't seem to have an obviously wealthy community of musicians. Is that just a question of size, of population? Or is there something missing from the Acadiana music business ecosystem that exists in other music cities like Austin or New Orleans?
I mean, I would say size is probably one of the main factors. Lafayette's only so big. There's only so many places that you can go out and play music and do it regularly without burning out your audience. So for me, size would be a thing. I think Sean could probably touch on the genre thing. I think that's another issue as far as being able to make a living playing music. Yeah. In Lafayette, it's very specific to certain genres. Certain types of music do better than other. It does better than other music here. So we both don't typically market ourselves as, you know, Cajun Zydeco music, which is the top two contenders in Lafayette, Louisiana, as far as the music business side of things go. So I think that, yeah, size and genre is probably some of the biggest factors, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. It's size, too. I think that it's so small that everyone's just so tight-knit. It's like,
we know everybody.
Yeah, you know, and why leave your house whenever you can cook at home with your family? You know, in big cities, everyone's out there on their own trying to make their way.
Are we also conditioned to expect music and art for free in this community?
Yeah, that too. Which is a great thing. Like, it's not a hurt, but...
Well, it's definitely the family aspect of it. I mean, we feel like, you know, down here, friends are family. So it's as a musician, it's hard for me to want to charge my friends and family to get into shows, but at the same time, it needs to be done, I guess. But, and at the same time, I just don't care, you know?
Yeah, when the best nights are just a group of friends playing music, then that's hard to then charge for the same thing just because it's in a different venue.
Right.
Yeah, It's the value thing where it's like it's you seem like it's not value, but on the back end, it's what makes it really valuable, I think.
And it's one of those things, is it because we're so used to getting it for free that we don't value it, even though it's one of the things we're so proud of in this culture?
It's true.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even as, you know, a fan, it's you got to walk a tightrope here because, you know, a lot of times I probably do get into shows without paying the cover because I'm best friends with the person playing, and in the back of my mind I know I should be paying that cover, you know, because I'm supporting them. And it gets to a point of where, like, you go see each other enough and you're just passing money from each other's hands, but at the same time I think it's pretty valuable to help other musicians out. It's true.
Look at this local economy and the musicians just
we're just exchanging
circling
money.
Everybody knows each
other. No one's
making
money, but we're just sharing.
Yeah, very much like that.
It just matters who spends it the most. That's when it becomes an issue.
So both of you, the reason that you guys are here is because I know both of you also have very business-minded attitudes. Lane, was going on The Voice a business decision or an emotional decision or a decision just for fame?
I think it's definitely a bit of all of that, but I guess in the back of my mind, it was a bit of a business decision. Only good could have come out of it if I make it through the process and get myself into a national audience.
And tell us a bit about the process, because we see you on The Voice and go, oh, well, that was obvious. But it was actually a year-long process to get there?
Yeah, from start to finish. Actually, from start to the blind auditions, it was about a year-long process. And
did they find you or did you find them?
A little bit of both, I guess you could say. I filled on. They have an online profile that you go and you fill out, you know, with your information. And back whenever my buddy Ray Boudreaux had done it, I decided I would go fill out the profile. And like most things, I never finished. I put in a couple of bits of information about myself and maybe uploaded one or two YouTube links and never finished the rest of the application. And about a year later, I get a call from the, you know, one of their producers saying, oh, well, we saw your YouTube video and we want you to come out and do an audition. So I got to skip the open calls, which is, they call that the cattle calls, where they herd everybody in, 5,000 to 8,000 people at a stadium, and you go through the process of auditioning. So I had a timed audition. I showed up in Houston at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and did my audition and knew pretty much then if I was moving on to the next round or not. And
Which was a yes,
but up until day of, you know, they'll fly you out to LA, and up until the day of, they were cutting people off their list. So it was a long process. There was quite a few auditions in between the initial audition and the actual television audition.
So Sean, is this something you've considered to raise your profile?
In that aspect, not quite like that, but for me, I just think that we really got to work hard together and build a community and develop a scene. There needs to be...
And Sean, you started your own recording label to
correct.
Do this to help you and other artists?
Eventually. I did it because I've never met a musician that agreed to their record label deal. And most of my favorite musicians that I follow independently release all their music. So that's why I wanted to do it at the same time. I knew there needed to be someone to put a stake down and make it happen and start getting all your friends on board and try to get some attention outside of the state for what we do.
So if it's easier in Nashville and Austin and New York City, why are you guys still here?
Because it's home.
It's home.
Yeah. There is nothing else. I mean, we've traveled to a lot of different places playing music, and every place I've been just doesn't have the same feel as Lafayette. It doesn't have that, I guess, family orientation to it. Even, you know, friends and family. Like I said, we consider our friends family here. And
so let me ask a very business question rather than an artistic question. Both of you have written songs that have a commercial bent very cleverly. Lane, you wrote a song called The Water Is Rising, and we know it's going to be played every time it floods here. And Sean, you wrote a beautiful song called Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
When you wrote those, was there the commercial thing in mind before you wrote them, or was just the artistic thing in mind, and it just happened to work out that they're perfect to play in the background of things?
I don't think I ever write for a commercial aspect. I think when I'm writing, the process is always, it's always an artistic process for me. If the song happens to have, because for me, on this latest record that I did on Swampadisiac, to me, the most commercial song on there would be Bad Bad World, as a national kind of commercial thing. And when I was writing the song, it never crossed my mind that this is a commercial-sounding song. It was through other friends' opinions saying, oh, man, that should maybe be your radio single that you push out to the stations, you know? Because it does have a... it's not such a local flair to it. That one has more of a national sound to it. And I think, and you could probably attest to this, that most of the times when you're writing songs, you're not thinking commercial-based.
Yeah, I don't think you're even quite... You've been thinking about it.
No, you think about that way later when it's time to actually put the album out to radio stations.
I mean, if you're thinking commercially, for the song Louisiana for me was, it's not that commercial, to be honest. You know, it's just Louisiana, and it won't make its way any other state I ever try to play it. So in my head at the time, I was literally looking at a flag and just kind of thought more of it as a love song, if anything. It was a connection with me, but it did. It did. Help me here. So on the back end, once it got released, it came around.
And some people can you not, push that out of your mind so it doesn't affect your next song?
Correct.
Does that make
yeah.
sense? You don't want to write about Lafayette. Does that become a thing you don't do deliberately, or does it become a thing you manage to forget about in the artistic process?
Well, I mean, you take your songs, you look at them, you really look at them as marketing pieces. You're like, how am I going to use this? How am I going to make this valuable to get it out? And
so let's talk about marketing and the curse and blessing of the internet. I know especially you, Lane, you do a lot of Facebook Live. You had a thing with your latest album where you got people to do your guitar solo
yeah.
and picked a winner, and that got a lot of traction.
That was cool.
It was great. I think I watched all of them. But then you've got this easy way to market yourself. I know you both have Instagram and you're involved in Facebook.
Right.
And you can speak directly to your fans. And Lane, I know you show us what you're doing in your kitchen when you're just making up songs. But then you've got the other side of the internet, which has made music not freely accessible, but incredibly low cost, especially for you guys. I know Lane recently put on his Facebook page a report.
Was it the royalties?
Your royalties report, which I have in my hand.
Oh, cool. You printed it out.
And
yeah.
It works out that for an average across the world, for each play, you get 0.4p. So you had 12,322 plays, and you made $50.
Yeah, lunch is on me.
And that just seems, I don't think that's what we expect when we buy music online. I'm kind of proud of myself because I pay for music online rather than stealing it.
I think that's something to be proud of, for sure.
But then you're getting so little of it. So is the internet both a curse and a blessing, or is it...
Oh, of course.
I think... I stared at it and studied forever. Like, what's the music industry going to be since Spotify streaming is now a thing? But the internet, to me, it's a marketing thing. It's helping you. But at the same time, I feel like music's kind of turning to be the platform for music now. It's only your music went online. It's only going to be a marketing tool for you to get into a venue and play live shows and be tangible. And people buy records at the show. LPs are
right.
Vinyls coming back. So
vinyls
that's
back.
How you sell it. But I think that's kind of like the host now, is kind of the internet is doing this type of stuff, developing media content for people to see you, and then put yourself in a position to play and perform
well,
live.
I've always, as a music lover and a fan of other musicians, I mean, I remember gravitating towards certain musicians at, the youngest age of 12, 13 years old, and I look up to these musicians, and I would follow what they were doing, but the internet wasn't on the internet back then, so I had to buy the actual CD, read the liner notes, go
buy a music magazine and learn
yeah
about
music
them.
Magazines
yeah.
That's right. And so like for me as a musician, I love the connection to the artist, and I hope that people love the connection to me as a musician, so that's why I try to put myself out there.
But you're both musician and marketer these days, and you both happen to be very strong in both of those aspects.
Well, I love it. And I guess if I wasn't doing music and I had to find an actual job, I think marketing would be something that I would explore just because it's fun. It's fun to think of different ideas to put a brand out there.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Aileen Bennett. I'm talking with musicians Sean Bruce and Lane Mack. Is there a way from where you are now to doing your own music full-time in Lafayette?
I think that there's definitely a way I could do it full-time. I don't know if it's necessarily the vision, a full-time vision that I have. You know what I mean? I could quit my day job right now and I could play solo gigs every night in the bars and restaurants around here and probably make a decent living doing it. Is it something that I see myself doing? No, I don't think it is. I think...
If you had to do it every night, do you think you'd lose the...
Oh, I would definitely lose the passion for it. But I think that that avenue of being a full-time musician is not the avenue that I see as my dream or my end goal. To me, it's more of being able to do my own music, being able to not have to play covers every night in a bar. You know, that's the vision of being a full-time musician that I have. And that's something that I don't know if that goal is attainable here in Lafayette alone.
Sean and Lane, this is the part of the show we called Another Great Idea. Maybe you've got a friend like this, someone who's always got that great idea for you. They tell you about this job you should apply for, or this guy you should have a cup of coffee with, or a great investment opportunity you should jump on. You can take advice like this, and it turns out to be a disaster. You can dismiss this advice and miss out on something that might really have turned out great. Or you can take your friend's advice, and it turns out to be the best thing that ever happened to you. I know you guys get this kind of advice all the time as musicians. You should do this, or you should record this. Do you have an example in your life or career of a friend who had that great idea for you? Did you take their advice, and how did it turn out?
This is kind of funny. I don't know if you mind if I go. Well, all right. I actually...
As long as you're not going to tell us a story about Sean giving you advice.
No, I'm going to tell you a story about you giving me advice. Because the first time that I ever met you... You were speaking, I forget exactly where it was, but I was working.
Should I apologize now?
No, I was working for an interior designer at the time, and we went and listened to you, and I asked you a question at the end of the session, and I asked something along the lines of money and what you do for a line of work, and I just remember you telling me, it's... You know, and I've heard this many times, but for some reason when you said it to me, it was a little more special, and I don't
know
why,
accent.
But it was... Yeah, it's the accent. It makes it sound legit, you know? But you told me to do what I love, and the money will follow. And that's extremely true, and I have a very hard time letting go of control enough to actually follow that advice, but I know that in the back of my mind, that's something that everybody should do.
I think, yeah, the real advice there is do what you love, work really, really, really hard at it, and the money
yeah.
will follow. Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of in-between.
Yes.
But that's something that's always stuck with me, which is pretty cool that we kind of come full circle.
I did not know that was you. I remember who you're talking about.
That's awesome, man.
I've only just put two and two together.
And on the flip side, I feel like I'm my own advice chamber, and I... You know how many big ideas that I have that I never follow through with? And you're probably the same way.
Oh, absolutely.
When him and I were working together, finishing cabinets, it was like, that's how it was every day. It's like bouncing ideas off of each other like crazy. And some of them we'd actually go through with.
I can imagine.
Yeah, with Cajuns, that's what we do.
Sean, what advice have you ignored or followed?
It actually happened this year recently, and kind of where I got into my position with my work now. I was supposed to go... I was supposed to move, like, in November, past November, and pursue... I was taking an internship at this record label, and I decided to just put it aside and stick around, so I put in an internship application at Festival International, and Lisa Stafford, she does all the programming, she told me, you got to do this because you're going to meet so many people. You just go. You're going to meet so many people. I think that once as the festival came around, I was working behind the scenes of doing all this stuff. It's very, very true. Just... You got to go out and network, and if someone says go, you're going to meet so many people, go. And it worked out, because now I did meet a lot of people and made a lot of connections, and then I ended up getting me to the next level of my professional work, got me there, and that always paid off. And that's with everything, with musicians. It's like most of my friends that get gigs are the guys that stick around and hang out.
You know, it's funny you say that, man, because I'm having a hard time at the point in my life that I'm at right now with two small children and a full-time job. I don't have the time to go out on the weeknights and even on the weekends anymore. to rub elbows with everybody. And
is that where social media steps in, where they still feel they
see
you? Yeah,
I think
every day?
That's kind of what takes the place of me not actually being there.
Just itching to get out.
Yeah, I mean, I itch to get out. And the thing is like when you're out and about and you're talking with different people, making connections, you're always in the know. So you know what shows are coming through here, and it's a little easier to book those things. And for me, it's like I said, it's hard for me to get out right now, and I do struggle with that a little bit, because I do want to be out there making those connections. And in music, that's what everything is. It's 100% connection.
I think in every business, it's always about people.
Everyone that I've talked to that graduated college got their jobs because they knew someone.
Yes.
You know, and that's ultimately how it is.
Yeah, people do business with people they like, whether that's the music business or any other business.
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this. Let's talk to our listeners and our fans for a second. How did they help? That obviously you want them to... You want them to buy your music. Do you want them to buy the hard copy of the show, or do you want to buy online so you boost and get into the iTunes charts? Or do you want them to buy a T-shirt? Or how do they help the most? Because I think people want to know that. Where do you make the most money?
I mean, we probably have the same exact answer, but it's when you're out there playing shows.
Yeah.
Want us to show up.
Show up.
Pay the cover. Even if we're on the guest list, pay the cover.
Yeah.
And buy a T-shirt, buy a CD.
Buying merch is that.
Throw money at you.
Well, it's the direct transfer of money. You know, there's no middleman when you're buying merch. I make a T-shirt, you buy the T-shirt, I get the money. Simple as that. I don't have to pay a percentage to anybody else, you know.
So this is how we grow the music scene. We make sure we show up and...
Yeah, I mean, word of mouth.
It's a shop small kind of idea, you know, like...
Yeah, it is. It's the same as shop
like
local.
You've got to go and...
There's no point saying you love local music unless you're willing to help it out. So tell me your business plan for the next 5 years.
Okay.
You first.
Yeah.
I love that you can answer this.
Oh, man, I'm going for it. It's because it's been a... I think ultimately it's always been a business plan. I want to get this Norwood Recording Company thing a true shot. You know, it's kind of the thing that just feels like it's always lingering. I want to create sort of a management team. I want to create a booking team that gets this type of music out on the road. I'm working with Mark Broussard, too, to develop a new age record label right now, which is like a digital content media provider.
Right, which you can find some of that online right now.
Yep, it's called Artist Tone Records, so I'm working with him to do that. And I think it's all about wearing as many hats as you can. I would love to just be on the road with friends. If I'm not performing, I might just tour manage and just curate my life wearing as many
musical... And you all help each other, and you sit in each other's bands, you play drums, and people play guitar for you. It's one of the things we love about music.
Yeah, and that's any artist, you know, like every artist wears so many hats, so you have to wear them all. It's side hustles.
So will we be able to afford you to come back in the show in 5 years' time? And
oh, absolutely. Yes.
Lane, business plan, 5 years.
Five-year business plan. Well, to be honest with you, and this is kind of crazy, is like I put a lot of effort into this record, and not even the same amount as I put into the last album, but I got so burnt out on this that now through the end of the year, I'm almost trying to take a little hiatus and take a break, and with my own music. Now, as a guitarist, I'm trying to pick up as many more guitar gigs as I can out there, because... I mean, I love guitar just as much as I love writing music or singing my own songs, but I think it's good to step back. I have a few new tracks that I'd like to get into the studio with, so of course I'm going to continue to release music. The next 5 years, hopefully I got two record projects that I'd really like to do, and one of them definitely ties into Louisiana music. I'd like to do a whole Swamp Pop album of old Swamp Pop songs, and really try to capture the feel that they did back then when they were coming out in the 60s. But, I'm going to continue working on music. I see myself kind of doing the same thing in 5 years. I'm happy where I'm at. And if better and bigger things come along, well, I'll take that ride.
I look forward to hearing from you both. Sean, Lane, Next time we go out and hear music or listen to music on our phone or on KRVS, we'll have more of an understanding of what goes on in the business lives of those people in the chain of events who make the music and are attempting to make a living from it. Thank you so much for the brief but informative and fun education you've given us today. Sean and Lane, thank you both for the great times you give us, and thank you for taking the time to join me today on Out to Lunch.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
My guests on Out to Lunch today have been musicians Sean Bruce and Lane Mack. You can find out more about Sean's and Lane's music by following the links on our websites, krvs.org and itsacadiana.com. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Morell. Our researcher is Anne Christian. If you want to know what we all look like, you can find photos from this show on our website, itsacadiana.com. And on our It's Acadiana Facebook page, these photos were taken by Lucius A. Fontenot. You can find out more about Lucius at lafphoto.com. You can get this show and past shows as a podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with us on all kinds of social media by going to our website, itsacadiana.com. Out to Lunch is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsacadiana.com and KRVS 88.7 FM. I'm Aileen Bennett. Thanks for joining me. I look forward to meeting you next week around the lunch table for more business Acadiana style on Out to Lunch.
Out to Lunch Acadiana is recorded live over lunch at Social Southern Table and Bar in Lafayette. Social is open 6 days a week for lunch and dinner with brunch on Sundays. The Out to Lunch Acadiana theme music, Encore Monsieur Nice Guy, is written by Mitch Foreman and performed by Mitch Foreman and Andre Michaud. Out to Lunch Acadiana business consultants are Pete Prados from Innovate Acadiana, Zach Barker from The Opportunity Machine, and Dr. Blake Escade. Out to Lunch is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsacadiana.com and KRVS 88.7 FM. Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker. Established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base, JonesWalker.com. And by Schuert & Associates, legal recruiters in Louisiana and Texas. Support for Out to Lunch Acadiana comes from Wyndham Garden Lafayette, located off Pinhook near Collie Saloon. Wyndham Garden Lafayette is a pet and family-friendly hotel with reception space for large and intimate events, free parking, free Wi-Fi, and a free shuttle within 3 miles that includes the airport and downtown restaurants.
There's a place of power, of dreams, of strength, of courage. It's hard to get to, but it's not far away. And on the next Snap Judgment from WNYC, I'm holding your first-class ticket. Snap proudly presents Fortress of Solitude. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Coming up tonight at 10 on KRVS.
This is John Burside, better known as JB.
And Melvin Caesar, better known as MC. And we want you to join us each week for the Zydeco et Passale program for the best in Creole and Zydeco music in the area and even in the world.
Zydeco et Passale, coming up Saturday morning at 8, right here on KRVS.
Now you can get a little bit of this. Or you can get a little bit of this. But I tell you one thing, there's only one place that you can find this sweet melodic melting pot of music. And I promise you, it's on the Franco mix avec Drake Benoit LeBlanc. only on KRVS 88.7. Thursdays at 9 p.m. It's a formidable.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.